Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Thank you.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No. Nope.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This, God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had number shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't, lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad, Cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit, and it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he...
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be, super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that sometimes you're right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you're driving.
That is true.
Down a super highway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build little shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions. Took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. I coming along, I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. Get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them. And there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and big, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their hands.
yesterday we had a guest on who was homeless, and he's got a problem that I haven't figured out how to help him out with yet. We can help him. We can help him by teaching him how to build a house. But many homeless people, not all, but many, who particularly if they're not in shelter, or some homeless people have jobs. Many homeless have people. A lot of these people need
because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be, superhighways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you are driving.
That is true.
Down a superhighway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions. Took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know that know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon, that was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them. And there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and big. Because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their hands.
All right, I'm trying to get my board straight here. So be patient with me here. Anyway, I'm gonna be fast.
Hello. How you doing?
By the time you met Blondon, how big were you getting? Like, how much were you buying on a regular basis?
Oh, no, maybe a couple pounds, 16 pounds maybe.
16 pounds.
Yeah, 8 pounds, something like that. At that time, pounds were going for 35,000 a pound, yeah.
By the time you met Blondon, how much cash did you have?
I don't know. I had a few hundred thousand.
A few hundred thousand. So you weren't a millionaire back then, but you were well off.
I was doing good.
You
were
doing good.
I was doing pretty good.
So how did the whole Blondon thing come together?
Well, see, we were still getting from Blondon, but we wasn't going directly to Blondon.
It was a middleman.
It was a middleman. So the only thing happened when we met him personally was that the middleman had got cut out, which dropped the price even more. But we were already getting it from Blondon, technically.
Technically.
Yeah.
You just weren't talking to him.
I just wasn't talking to him.
Okay. So how did you end up meeting him?
I bought him.
You bought him?
Mm-hmm.
So you basically bought your connect.
Yeah.
So you told your middleman, I'm going to give you...
$60,000.
$60,000, and you introduced me to your connect. And you can walk away with that $60,000.
Yep. And then Blondon paid $60,000 as well.
To meet you?
Yeah, to meet me.
So the connect got $120,000 to essentially... walk away from that part of the business?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he got spooked, I heard. You know, somebody had got busted.
He was trying to get out of the game?
He was trying to get out of the game, so he felt, you know, he'd take $160,000, go back to Honduras, and live like a king.
$120,000. And that's what he did? He left?
I guess, yeah, for a while.
Okay. So now you're working with the Connect.
Okay, Mama Evelyn, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
All right, yeah.
How you doing?
Fine. I think I might need to get a new modem on this end. Any event, you have a big event happening in about
couple weeks.
Quite 10 days, I think.
Yeah, it'll be on the
30th. On the 30th of this month. And for people who don't know, what's the name of that event?
It's called Reclaiming Our Youth Day. It's an intergenerational shift celebration where elders can come and reconnect with the generations that follow them and share information that stopped getting shared. The vendors come. And they, instead of paying to set up, they pay a child to work with them that day to learn about business. It's about encouraging young people to develop an economic bottom in our community that is sustainable by us. Okay? Most of us don't know if we spend a dime out of every dollar with just our people, we can create 20,000 jobs a year in our community. Okay, I've been trying to do a dollar a month just for us, where we find a black bank and all 750 billion of us send a dollar one day a month to that bank. That would give us $750 billion to rebuild our community each month by just sending a dollar. There are a bunch of things we can do. Nobody is just telling us that it's out here, so we don't do them anymore.
Right. Let me ask you this. In Chicago, I know there are homeless people, but what about homeless teens? Are they visible in Chicago?
At the last, I stopped taking, and forgive me for this, but I stopped taking count about 12 years ago when I retired from work. And at that time, in the southwest side of Chicago, there were over 10,000 young people that were couch surfing. And I know a lot of people don't even know what that is, but it was over 10,000 of them.
Well, for those who don't know, I know what it is. Explain what couch surfing is. And
couch
there's a website on that, too.
They do?
It's been out for quite a number of years. Somebody told me about it in Ohio. And that's the way a lot of people travel the globe and save on accommodations, by couch surfing at somebody's house.
And what they do, young people do, they'll come to your house with your child and they'll sleep on your couch until you say, okay, it's time for you to go home now. You thinking the child is going back home to their parents, but they go into another friend's house where they can stay there until the parents say it's time to go. But sometimes the reason that so many children come up missing is because they will end up on the couch of traffickers.
Mm.
So then they're never heard from again. And
never
we don't want to believe that we got traffickers in our community, but anybody that grew up in the black community know if a stranger come and try to snatch you off the sidewalk, the people going to do something to you.
Right.
They're not going to just let it happen.
Well, these teams that are couch surfing now, we have to, if we can trace back their route, which means more than likely their parents didn't have any stable place. That might not be the case
right.
in all cases, you know, because people, you know, some people get put out. Some people have an argument and walk out. So there are many reasons why people, you know, might.
I found in the majority of cases that the parents were in, like you said, unstable living situations. The second largest was children who were being sexually abused and were running away from home. There were whose parents went to jail for selling drugs and that kind of stuff, and they refused to go to an aunt or a grandparent's house, and they were out here. Because, we used to have places here. I don't know if they still are because I don't work on that level, on the formal level with agencies anymore, because I found out that they do too much lying and hampering of the community rebuilding ourselves. But we used to have safe spaces here in Chicago where young people can go and stay up to 2 weeks before you had to notify the police or a parent that the child was there. Okay, and it was specifically because children being sexually abused. And a lot of times we want to say that it's the parents that are sexually abusing them. Sometimes the children are met with the parents because they feel like the parents should be able to detect what's going on in that situation, but they don't. It can be a neighbor, it could be an uncle, it could be an aunt, because, see, and that's another, you know, fable-minded thought we have, that women don't sexually abuse children, but that's not true. You don't have as many women, but you do have women that sexually abuse children, too.
Well, there are predators everywhere. School systems and whatnot.
But I could tell you this. In the city of Chicago and Cook County, if they wanted to end homelessness, they could do it in 2 hours with all of the vacant land that the Cook County Land Bank owns, but refuses to return it to the community. They could end homelessness. The average block that you go on got at least 4 or 5 empty houses on it that the county land bank owns.
Matter of fact, about how many homes are in the Cook County Land Bank, you know?
I think the last time they counted, somebody said it was over 10,000 or something.
I'm
not all that tech savvy. So, you know,
I'm
asking
now.
Somebody else to show me how to do the research.
Okay, Cook County Land Bank Authority. Let's see.
And seeing a couple of years ago, we had 10 young blacks that tried to buy property from the Cook County Land Bank in Inglewood. They say that they were hampered from buying it. They were blocked from getting the land. And that was one of the black communities, strong black communities that there were.
Hmm.
Okay. So if you telling the people who were born and raised there that they can't invest in their community, what are you saying to them?
Right. So I'm trying to. All right. Let's see. Cook County, Illinois. That's Cook County, Illinois. But that's not the land bank, though.
No,
I'm trying to find out the number of houses, number of properties, properties in Cook County Land Bank.
Yeah. You can go on some blocks here in Chicago, and there are more vacant houses than there are people living in the houses.
Okay.
And about 80% of those communities are black communities.
All right, I'm on their website right now. All right, about us. Let's see what that says. All right, the Cook County Land Bank Authority was formed by ordinance of Cook County in January 2013 to address the large inventory of vacant residential, industrial, and commercial property in Cook County. The ordinance was created by two extensive reports conducted by the Cook County Urban Land Institute. The land bank is a unit of the Cook County government, funded primarily with grants, contributions, and revenue from transactions. It is the largest land bank by geography in the country and is governed by the board of directors appointed by the Cook County President Tony Pretwinkle and the Cook County Board of Commissioners. All right, now I'm trying to find out how many. Trying to find out how many. We know there's got to be hundreds, if not thousands.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know it's in the thousands. I'm telling you, you can go on some blocks here, and there are more vacant houses than there are ones that are occupied.
Let's see. Okay, I'm just trying to find a number on here. Okay, let me try to remember the number of vacant properties in Chicago. I'll do it that way.
And the biggest thing here is that the black caucus that we have in city council, the only person I ever hear speaking up in favor of the residents here in the black community is Jeanette Taylor. The rest of these folks that we have in the black caucus, we need to figure out how to get rid of and get some people that actually are going to work in our best interest. We don't have that right now. What we have is people fast-tracking our communities. If you go down 63rd Street from State Street to Weston, you see more vacant and where they done tore down vacant lots and stuff, and that used to be the business district. But they're fast-tracking it now, so all you see is vacant lots.
Hmm.
Now what that means, that those aldermen have gotten together and decided they're going to sell that land to developers. That's the reason that they're forcing people out of the business district.
Okay, I found one number here. This classification is abandoned buildings in Chicago. So they've got 18,000 abandoned properties in Chicago.
And a lot of those are where they have people have been forced out. It's, a lot of it is intergenerational property where they have forced them out because of back taxes or failure to be able to pay a water bill when they took all of the jobs out of our community. So how are they expecting you to pay
you
the
got
bills
a lot
when
of that.
Those jobs have left the community?
Let's see, hundreds so of long vacant properties in Chicago. Let's see what that has here. Here's an article. Hundreds of long vacant properties in Chicago and Cook County are going for sale for a discount. Let's see, Englewood. 10 vacant lots in Chicago will be given away to neighbors and community groups, and even more will be offered at a steep discount. The Cook County Land Bank Authority is holding a holiday buying program. What date is this article, though? All right, this was last year, December.
Yeah.
Let's see, but they're not giving the number of properties. Well, let's see. City with the largest, or city with. But you're right, though. The politicians basically give these. I mean, the developers are politically connected.
Yeah. And I know it used to be it had to be two consecutive lots years ago. They talked about it had to be two consecutive lots in order to be, or 138 square feet or something for a developer to be interested in the land.
Mm-hmm.
So if people are wondering why they tearing down stuff that's next to each other, there's your answer right there. So you need to look at your alderman and election day. You need to make sure you don't vote for that alderperson. Because they telling you they selling you out. They showing it to you.
Here I found something interesting. Okay. Which city has the most vacant homes in the United States? So based on, oh man, what's this list? Okay, wait a minute. I wish they would put these in. Or here we go. They have a list of 15 here, so I'll read from 15 to number 1. Number
okay.
15, and these are cities with the most vacant buildings, I guess, based on the percentages of houses in their town. Number 15 is Memphis, Tennessee, 3.7% of the housing stock in that city is vacant. Next to that, above that at 14, is St. Louis, Missouri. 4% of their housing stock is vacant. Coming in at number 13, Indianapolis, Indiana, 4.1% of their housing stock is vacant. Number 12 is Dayton, Ohio at 4.3%. Next is number 11, Cleveland, Ohio at 4.5%. Number 10, West Palm Beach, Florida, St. Petersburg, Florida, 5.1%. Mobile, Alabama, 5.1%. Birmingham, Alabama, 5.5%. Number 6 is Kansas City, Missouri, 5.6%. Number 5 is Baltimore, Maryland, 8.1%. Detroit is number 4 at 11.2% of their housing stock is vacant. Number three is Flint, Michigan. That's 45 miles away from Detroit. 15.7%. Hilton Head, South Carolina, 16.9%. And number one in the United States is Gary, Indiana. 19.4% of their housing stock is vacant. That's the top 15.
Chicago wasn't even on the list?
They only went to 15. They went with the top 15.
Okay.
Based on a percentage of the city. But now, let's see. Chicago's got to be in here somewhere. What state has the most vacant homes? Well, they say Florida. Okay. United States ranks number four in the world with the most vacant buildings. Japan is number one. Cyprus is number two. Hungary is number three. But the United States is number four. Let's see. Let's go back to Chicago. How many vacant buildings? Vacant. Buildings in Chicago. Well, you named it. Like people can lose their home over a water bill.
I know. And see, guess what? See, and this is the thing that I'm telling people that they need to go and look at how their alderman is voting on different things.
All right, now let's say today it's. Oh, hold on, I'm making sure this is Chicago. Today only five. All right, they have 5,158 vacant buildings that are registered in the city, and that's less than one third of the estimated total of vacant buildings. So, okay, a third. So we're talking about Chicago's at least 15,000-16,000 vacant buildings, at least. But only 5,000 of them are registered.
Right. Every address in the city of Chicago is at the Cook County Assessor's Office. They know who paying their property taxes and their water bills. So evidently they lying in their reports too. Because they probably got certain developers that they are automatically going to give certain lands to. That's the way Chicago works. Ain't nobody on the up and up here that makes the final decision. They done already sold out.
Oh, now I got a number for Cook County. With more than 55,000 vacant homes in Cook County.
Right.
That's a city. That's a whole city.
And I would be willing to bet that about 72% of those came from Black and Hispanic families.
Oh, no question.
And it might be more than that. I'm just guessing at the numbers.
Let's say they got a picture here, this guy. The abandoned home crisis in Chicago has kept Finn Kane's demolition business afloat. So apparently he's making a lot of money from just tearing down homes in Cook County.
Yeah, and basically he go down. Basically, what do you call them, demolishers?
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I wish I was still driving. I would take you pictures of 63rd Street, which used to be one of the biggest business districts in the city, because the people in the community could walk to stores and get what they wanted. Okay, a few years back, I submitted a community reinvestment plan to some of the elected officials They told me I was crazy. I told them, I said, if the city is really interested in rebuilding the economic base in communities, take these lots and people within a four-block radius on certain days, they could come out and they could use their innate talents, sell the cookies that they sell, crochet goods, different things that they make at home that they could sell, and hire the men in the community to clean the lots afterwards. And only people that would pay to set up is those people that didn't live within that four-block radius, okay? And the money from that, and then you worked on getting those people into different classes so they could get certified and get business licenses and that kind of stuff and buy some of the vacant buildings. They told me I was crazy. But I'm sure that they probably took the proposal and rewrote it because that's what they do in the city of Chicago. They steal your ideas and take the credit for it. So basically, what I try
I'm looking at one of the primary causes of homelessness in a city like Chicago, Boston, or L.A., or any large city like that, we have a lot of vacant houses, is high property taxes and high water bills, municipal water bills.
Okay. So I'm going to just say this. Let's do the Inglewood community by itself. If you live from 55th to 59th Street, you got one tax bill. On the same street, I'm going to just go down Damon, okay? So, but if you live from 59th Street on the south end to 67th Street, you got another tax base, which is higher than the first one. And then if you live from 71st Street to 79th Street, you got an even higher tax base. And you heard that this is people living within a block of each other that pay different taxes, different amounts. And that's the, I don't know what they do in other communities. I just know that's what they did in the Inglewood community because I lived there for almost 40 years before I gave my house away.
Well, where I look at now, if you want to live in a city of any size, matter of fact, let me go with the top 100 cities here. Let's see. Top 100 largest cities in the U.S. All right, I got a list with the top. Well, I got, well, let's see. Let's go with the top 200. I mean, I wish they would rank the, all right, here we go. All right, I have a list here of the 200 most populated towns in the United States. Now, you guys heard me put out this stat before. I'm putting it out here again. There are 19,500 municipalities in the United States. Now, there are other towns that are unincorporated, but they're not municipalities. So out of the 19,500 towns in the United States, I have a list here of 200. Now, Metairie, Louisiana is on the list. And it goes, how many people live? And you got, I guess their population is, hold it, anywhere between 138. Oh, hold on. Well, let me go. I got it so I can read this right. All right, their 2022 population in Metairie, Louisiana is, let me give, all right, 142,135 people. My whole thing is most people are not going to take my suggestion on this, is the best place to live, in my opinion, population of 2,500 people or less. And 47% of the population of the United States lives in, this is 40, just Band-Aids. They're keeping.
Okay, you keep going out.
Hello?
Hello? Yeah, you keep going out on me.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
No, I'm not L.A. I'm a listener. I'm just wondering if you can hear me.
I can hear you,
but
you two can't hear me. Okay, wait a minute.
Oh.
All right, wait a minute.
Folks,
back.
Welcome to Solar Cabin Channel. I've got a neat little project for you. I call the Multi-Shack. This is one of my homeless housing solutions designs. And some of you probably don't know this, but I was homeless twice in my life. The first time was when I was trying to get into college, and I had lost my job and was waiting for my college funding to come in, and so I had to live in my truck. I lived in the cab of my truck for almost 2 months while I waited for my college funding to come in. And then again later in life when I got divorced and didn't have a job and was trying to get off grid, I lived for almost 2 years in a camp trailer. And, you know, there's a lot of people that, homeless people that have their pride. They want to maintain their independence. They don't want to live on welfare. They don't want to be caught up in the system. And, you know, all they need is a simple shelter, you know, someplace to get out of the cold, to get out of the wind, to get out of the rain.
Okay, I'm going to see if you guys can hear me now. Okay, Mom Evelyn, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I had to hang up and call back in.
Okay.
So anyway,
there was
the,
a gentleman on
the,
here.
And Pleasant Stephens and the company called me from Chicago, so I got to text him. Anyway, what I was saying is, okay, let me go to Baltimore, Maryland. Baltimore, Maryland is ranked the 31st largest populated city in the United States. And at one time, Baltimore, in my opinion, was a very affordable. Hold it. Wait a minute. Let me. Okay. All right. Beasley, can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Okay. Let me rip off this real this real rant real quick. At one time, Baltimore, in my opinion, was an affordable city to live in. Now, there might be some pockets there that I would consider affordable. Here's my metric for that. At one time in Baltimore, you can get a four-level townhouse. In Baltimore, they call them row houses. In Baltimore, some sections of Baltimore had brownstones, three levels plus a basement, for, depending on what part of Baltimore you were in, for $350 a month, $350 a month. Now, that's some time ago. Now, the inner harbor of Baltimore has been, which used to be all black, that's completely gentrified. Then west of that east of that Fells Point, and I haven't gone through Baltimore in a while. But I'm saying all that to say this, because I got a friend of mine that lives in Baltimore. He's about to live out because he owes back rent. So, and his rent was like $700 a month. I told him, I said, look, man, for that kind of money, I would go to Home Depot, Lowe's, and Menards, buy you some lumber, and watch these YouTube videos and go out into the country somewhere in Maryland, Baltimore County, and build you a house for that kind of money and back rent. So I'm saying all this to say this. A lot of, in my opinion, a lot of the larger cities in the United States, and I'm going down to the 200, because you got 19,500 to pick from. Actually, more than that. But I would say towards the smaller communities, because these larger cities, D.C., Boston, Chicago, Los Angeles, San Diego, San Francisco, Seattle, Miami, Orlando, Dallas, San Antonio, these towns, in my opinion, they're Caesar. And if you don't play Caesar, and Caesar is the municipal water bill, you can lose your house. Property taxes, don't pay those, houses are going up for auction. In my opinion, the only way to keep sustainable in those towns is to...
Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
I'm sure. Yes, I can hear you.
Sound keeps going out. Now you're breaking up.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, but I don't hear L.A.
I just sent him a text. Are you Mother Evelyn?
Well, hey, folks, and welcome to Solar Cabin Channel. I've got a neat little project for you. I call the Multi-Shack. This is one of my homeless housing solutions designs. And some of you probably don't know this, but I was homeless twice in my life. The first time was when I was trying to get into college. And I had lost my job and was waiting for my college funding to come in. And so I had to live in my truck. I lived in the cab of my truck for almost 2 months while I waited for my college funding to come in. And then again later in life when I got divorced and didn't have a job and was trying to get off grid, I lived for almost 2 years in a camp trailer. And, you know, there's a lot of people that, homeless people that have their pride. They want to maintain their independence. They don't want to live on welfare. They don't want to be caught up in the system. And, you know, all they need is a simple shelter, you know, someplace to get out of the cold, to get out of the wind, to get out of the rain, while they get back on their feet. And so...
All right, can anybody hear me?
I can hear you now.
Beasley?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear
all
me?
Right, I had to call in on my smartphone. All right, I'm going to stop running my mouth for a bit. Beasley, any comments you want to make?
Look, I just connected in a few seconds ago. Brother L.A. And Mother Evelyn, have you ever heard of Teddy Pendergrass' song, "The Whole World's Laughing at Me"?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
The whole world is laughing at us black folk. And a brother of mine used to tell me when I first moved to Baltimore, he said, look, when foreigners get off the plane, the first thing they do is take a taxi to the black neighborhood because that's where they make their fortune at. And the information that you've given us this morning says that, hey, look, We have a goose that's laid the golden egg, and we won't go in and pick it up. It's shameful.
And see, you know, and I even tell
that.
Young about the Great Migration. See, they don't know. They would pool their money in the old days and buy one building. And you would come in and you would stay in that apartment with them until they would pool the money again, and then they would buy a building for the next person. And they kept doing that until everybody that was in that circle had their own living space. We don't even think about other ethnic groups have taken the idea from us, and they doing it now. But we don't even consider that.
No, we don't, because we don't understand the value of property. And look, Mother Evelyn, I guess that's your name. I'm shocked that the Louis Farrakhans, the Jesse Jacksons, and all the other ministers that's in Chicago that have large congregations of people that need decent housing haven't picked up on what L.A. has given us this morning. When you got 18,000 empty houses, like you said before, I wouldn't have gone to the city council, because the city council don't work for black folk. They should have gotten together and took a survey and asked their members who needs housing. And what they should have done, they got people with skills in those churches, and those churches could have refurbished those houses or built them. And the thing is, they would have decent housing. But you know what? When you're trying to get to heaven, you're of no earthly good. All you're doing is trying to get to that mysterious God that in the sky, and you don't know that you're catching hell right here on earth. It's shameful. It really is. I'm surprised. I'm going to try and get that list from Brother L.A.
All I did was go online and, you know, now which list you talking about?
No, I was just, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah, you got feedback. I was just telling my, Mother Evelyn that I don't know why a city like Chicago that has Louis Farrakhan in it, Jesse Jackson in it, and I guess thousands of preachers in it, they don't see what you see and take an inventory of the members that don't have decent housing in their congregation and put up a pot of money to get all of those houses, Brother L.A., because I'm quite sure over 80% of their parishioners are renting. And the thing is, they're not taking advantage of an opportunity to help their people, really.
See, the problem here in the city of Chicago, if you are a knowledge sharer or a truth teller here in the black community, you become a target.
Oh, no doubt.
You become a target by the powers that be.
Oh, I know.
And they're
going
to do whatever is necessary to try to shut you down.
Yeah, but
the community will not stand with you.
Well, Mother Evelyn, that's the problem. See, it's more of the people than it is of them. And the thing is, hey, if you got the numbers, you can vote those scoundrels out. And that's the thing that Brother L.A. teaches all the time. Hey, look, take control of your politics. Then you can go in and put the people in there that can pass those measures that needs to be done to give you the power to take over those communities. But we haven't reached that level of sophistication yet, you know, because Mother Evelyn,
Mama Evelyn named a solution which is not an original idea, but you have enough churches in Chicago, and you don't even need all of them. You don't even need all those churches.
That's right.
There's enough churches in every major city that they can put social services out of business this week. And they can also, they have the buying power to go in and take the, and provide homeless, I mean, houses for homeless people. But the churches are not together.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the people in the churches aren't together. And look, Brother L.A., you mentioned Baltimore. We used to have a Black History Club. And a gentleman came in there with a list of abandoned houses, and the brothers was in there talking about the white man this and all of the stuff that was going on in the city with the politics and everything. And the brother said, well, look, we can get these houses for a song and a dance. All we need to do is put together a few bucks every week and buy a house a month. And the conversation stopped. Well, me and another brother, we did get three of them and put them on Section 8. But the thing is, when you start talking about money and property and trying to do something amongst us, Brother L.A., that conversation goes silent.
Sure do.
That's true.
And they look at you like you're crazy.
Yeah,
that's
no doubt.
True.
But the thing is, that's the goose that lays the golden egg right there.
Even if preachers
are greedy for money, it seems like that would be an incentive for them to go in to use the congregations to buy those buildings. And look, Mother Evelyn, Brother L.A., in those churches, most of them belongs to set up by denominations. You got the AME, you got the COGIC, you got the AMEZ. And you got the Baptists, I mean, their numbers are just, outrageous. Even if they can't work together, those moderators of the Baptist conventions and the presiding elders of the AMEs and the AMEZs and the COGICs that have their people over their jurisdictions, I mean, they're already together. All they got to do is just say, well, look, give me $5 a month for the people in Chicago, and they could buy just about every last one of those houses in just one denomination if they had the mind.
Yeah, when they came
together. Yeah, well, they're already together. They just ain't using their resources wisely.
Well, look at what – now, Creflo Dollar, raised what, about $65 million or at least asked for it a few years ago to buy a jet for his church. Can you imagine how many houses you can buy for $65 million?
Yeah. You could buy all 18,000 of them in Chicago, probably. I know you can do it in Baltimore. But now look.
Definitely.
The preachers as a whole in Chicago raise more money every Sunday than Creflo Dollar raises a year.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah.
Think about it. Now, look, I'm just talking about I don't know how many churches are in Chicago, but let me give you this, and I gave you this one time before. 100 churches in Baltimore pledge to four banks to give them $1 million a Sunday to go in their vaults just for the privilege of going in and complaining about why their members didn't get loans. $1 million a week they pledged between four banks. Now, look, if you're raising $1 million every Sunday, you are a bank, but they couldn't see that.
Right.
And
right.
I'll send you the article. Because
Beasley, hold on a minute. We got Pleasant Stephens. 77 Pleasant, Delmar, are you on the line?
Yeah, we got you. We're here. Listen, go ahead.
Okay. All right. For the longtime listeners, you all know about Pleasant Stephens. Pleasant is, he's been around, but he hasn't been on here in a while. So we got Delmar America. They're out of Chicago. So Delmar, I'll turn over to you in Pleasant.
What did you say? I'm sorry. I missed that. Repeat that. Yes, what did you say? I'm sorry.
I was saying Pleasant Stephens is there. So, you know, you guys got any words? If you can give us an update of what's been happening with Pleasant.
Oh, well, he's getting stronger. Again, he's getting stronger and even better walking. So we're just praying the Lord that he's getting stronger. That's very important. And his mind is working. So we believe that we're back on the path to activity and getting things done, moving forward. That's what we're
Is he there with you now?
No, he's not at the house. He's walking and exercising, though. He's up to exercise. So he's sitting here listening, but he's getting stronger.
Well, Delmar, we were talking about the housing stock. We got on the line right now a few people. Marva Evelyn, who's in Chicago like you are right now. And then Brother Beasley, who's in North Carolina. And then we have some other callers in the queue. But the tail end of the discussion when you came in, Marv Ellen said earlier in the podcast, the housing crisis, for the sake of this conversation, in Chicago or any major city, can be resolved, let's say it's Thursday right now, could be resolved within a week if churches can somehow get together and start buying up these houses on a collective level. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, again, the key word is getting together, and I think I heard someone say they are together. Meeting together, building, being together, that's the same thing. People come together to go to some kind of religious emotional ceremony and leave it just as dumb and non-productive as they were before they showed up. The churches teach poverty. They teach poverty. You know why they teach poverty? Because if you don't teach wealth, you're teaching the opposite. There's no neutral. You're either teaching people how to better themselves economically or you're teaching them to just go along with what's happening. And the black community is poor because the black churches teach poverty. That's what they teach. As you say, they collect all that money. And then when it gets through you, it goes out, comes in, you cannot trace it to see what impact does it have in the black community. You can't find it.
There's no argument out of me.
So until we have some organizational way to collect money and use it in a constructive, planned way to rebuild things in the black community that we own, how much money comes into it will not matter. It's what's done with it. So, again, from my observation, the black churches are not together. They have no common agenda. I think most preachers just want to keep house and keep their big cars and things rolling for themselves and talk about going to heaven. And that's about all it's about. But then,
well,
so that's my thought right now for the first time.
You're not getting any argument out of me on that. Matter of fact, Creflo Dollar, just about a couple of weeks ago, it's on YouTube. He came out and said, forget about everything that he's taught about tithing.
On my phone.
Which I thought was interesting. And he lives in a pretty large house, but he came out and said forget everything he said about Tubby. Now I'm a believer in that, but it's interesting that he came out with that.
Well, Brother L.A., if we're doing bad, we deserve to be doing bad because, like the brother said, you know, we're preaching going to heaven and catching hell right here on earth. And he said, if you could put your money together, well, they're putting it together, the church people are. And look, I'm not letting the fraternities off the hook and the sororities off the hook. I'm not letting the NAACP off the hook, nor am I letting the Urban League off the hook. Because all of those organizations are collecting money. They're collecting dues. And the thing is, all they're doing is just taking them and giving them to the white man and putting them in his banks. And the white man is financing his community and businesses with the money that poor black folks are putting in these institutions. So the thing is, unless black folks rebel and demand that, hey, look, number one, show me the books, because that's what I, well, they kicked me out of church because I asked for the book, didn't see the books. Hey, look, what are we doing with this money? That's the question you got to ask. And when I asked that question, my presence in that church wasn't warranted anymore. I had to go somewhere else. But unless black folks get up there and raise hell with these preachers and these trustees, you'll never get anything done. But that's our dilemma.
Well, you got to, I guess you got to get a new breed of pastor in the church. Because most churches are basically family-based businesses. Like Fred Price's church, and I used to listen to Fred Price every Sunday. Fred's gone now, but it's, you know, the Faith Dome is still there. And basically, the Ever-Increasing Faith Ministries, that's a family-based business. Although Fred Price is gone. His daughter Angela, his eldest child, she's the CEO of all that. She's been running that for decades now. And all of his children and their spouses work for the family business, Ever-Increasing Faith Ministry. T.V. Jakes at the Potter's House. That's a family-based business. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. However, you do have a congregation where that money coming in, it could be recycled back into the congregation because, like you said, Beasley, the talent pool and the brain trust to revolutionize the neighborhood is right there in the pews every Sunday.
Well, Brother L.A., when you're talking about the T.D. Jakes's and the Creflo Dollars, yeah, they're private businesses. And in the cities that you have some storefront churches and some station churches, yeah. But when you're talking about the AMEZ, the Baptist, the COGIC, the AME, and the Christian Methodist Episcopal churches, those are community churches. They're run by the communities where they are established in. Now, they do have a hierarchy where they have the bishops and all of that stuff. But basically, these denomination churches are mostly community churches. So there's no excuse for them not to do what they're doing. It's just that we've been conditioned to look at the, and look, most of these churches I know in the denomination that they kicked me out of, the trustees run the church. Now, the pastor does things ceremoniously, and he's in charge of what goes on in the church, but the money's counted by the trustees. So, you know, and look, I guess the pastor's assistant, or what they call in the AMEs, they're the ones that controls the money. So these denomination churches, they are the ones where you can make the movements in, but now you take your Creflo Dollars and all of that stuff and a few of these storefront churches in the city, yeah, they're family businesses.
I see it as, it's the church is just one path or one way. It's private citizens really have to organize if, just like those black townships right after slavery. And a lot of those towns were formed by basically, you know, families. You know, one, two, maybe three families. Hopkins Park, Illinois, that was founded by three families.
Oh, yeah.
They got together and bought like 40 acres of land. I don't know how much it extended past that. But that's, and that town's still around. Pembroke, Illinois, I think that was from. Matter of fact, most towns in the United States was started by, Houston was started by, as big as Houston, Texas is, two brothers bought a bunch of land and they started Houston, Texas. Now it's got millions of people in it. Holland Beach, Maryland, was started by Laura Douglas and her husband, I forgot his name, but he was one of the, he was the son of President Douglas. They bought, I think, 40 acres of land, 40 or 50 acres of land in Anne Arundel County, Maryland. And that town still exists. You know, it might have 51 people in it, but I think basically that it, on a church level, you're going to have to probably get some innovative thinking, younger person in the pulpit, because the status quo the way it is now, they, you know, it's a family-based business, and you know the basic routine with that, first lady day and pastor's birthday and stuff like that. So.
Well, Brother L.A.,
Delmar,
you just said,
report out of Chicago.
What's the question again?
Anything on a horizon coming out of Chicago as far as what you guys are doing there?
Again, right now we are focusing on helping Mr. Pleasant get back in functioning health. Primary, a lot of things we got on paper, but right now we're just getting him back in activity, and we're going to be planning some sessions to connect with other people in the network. So that's where we are right now.
Now, Delmar, tell us a little, I know about you, but tell us a little bit about yourself for the people who don't know about you. Because I've only known Pleasant for about 7.5, almost 8 years, and you've known him for like, what, 24 years?
Yeah, we met 20-plus years ago. He was the first to call to my attention about vested interest. Black people, we don't have a vested interest in our communities. And he called my attention to what was happening in the churches, although I'm a minister within there. But I wasn't seeing what he saw as an outsider. And there was the money collected, but it's not used. It's not put back in the community to benefit the people from which it comes. It goes up, but it doesn't come back. And, of course, the reference to about the banks, the white banks don't have any plans for the black community. They don't need to and never will. Why should they? Well, yeah, we collect the money, put it in their banks, and they're not going to open the books to us. They don't have to. They don't need to. It's their bank. So
you know, a lot of those banks loan out money to different countries.
Oh, yeah, well, it's about making money. Yeah, they're concerned about where they can make more money. So it's not about putting it back in the black community and helping it become so. That's not part of their agenda at all. None.
All right, well. I'm glad Pleasant's, he's out doing therapy right now.
Yes, we have the process, that's right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Right. Well, I guess I'll catch you guys this afternoon then.
All right. We'll get back with you. Thank you, sir.
Okay. All right. Thanks for calling. Well, Mama Evelyn, if you had your way. First one, you're 4 times it's away from me. Can you hear me?
L.A.?
Mama Evelyn?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, you know I have. You know I got to go to my senior class now, but I'll get with you in the morning.
Okay.
All right. Talk to you then. All right.
All right. Peace, brother.
Okay. All right. That's Mama Evelyn out of Chicago. She's got Reclaiming Our Youth, which takes place the 30th of this month, and it'll be her 10th year doing that. On that. All right. Let me see. Now. Beasley, you still there? I'm trying to get to the next call. But trying to hear. Can you hear, still hear me? Okay, Beasley can hear me. My board frozen up. Bianchi, we're trying to get to you, but my board's frozen up. And all right, I'm refreshing my page. Bianchi, want to come to you next. Beasley, can you hear me?
Yes, barely. If you can hear me, pass along my prayers and everything to President Stephan, and I'm wishing that I'm wishing for him a speedy recovery.
Yes, he heard that. Thank you.
He's back. Okay.
Well, we just saying we still listening. We still listening.
Yeah, tell him his brother Beasley did that.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay. All right. Let's see. All right, Bianchi, I'm trying to come to. Oh, no. Not my whole. All right. Beasley. Everybody, I'm navigating between a smartphone. The landline phone, which is the main phone I use for this podcast every morning. But I might have to get a new, what do you call those things, router?
Or
modem. I might have to get a new modem. So, Bianchi, I'm trying to come to you now. I can't get to you on my laptop, which is the usual way. So I'm going to attempt to reach you on my smartphone. All right. Bianchi, you there now?
Tell me, what are you talking about? What's wrong with your technology?
I don't know. I think I might have to get a new
mode. I hate to say this, but it seems like you get worse and worse and worse.
Okay. That means I have nowhere to go but up.
You a big echo. You ain't on. I think it may be the company you keep. I don't know now. It's not. I can't say. But I believe it might be the company you keep. Because it's all your program used to be, you have a real nice program, man, but it had really sunk. And sometimes it's best for the person to step back and just sit down and look at what they have at hand. Look at what you got at hand and say to yourself, what am I going to do? But
well,
you know, you were talking about.
Nothing wrong with
that. You're talking about churches and all that. Why don't you just go to Michael Jordan? He's got $1 billion. Maybe he'll buy up and do these things. It's easier to talk to one than try to talk to a whole bunch of, do you think?
Okay, let me respond to that.
I know
some people not on his level.
But when I was basketball, I knew
some people that, hardcore basketball fans. I threw out the name some people recognize. Matter of fact, I did probably about four. Podcast. We got him archives here. Sam Jones, who was at NBA Ring with the Boston Celtics. He didn't play during the money league.
But I know some people who do.
Matter of fact, one of my former teammates is an assistant coach in the NBA right now. And he makes a million a year.
But I have a friend that I went to high school that can put me,
I mean, he's in direct contact with some of these power pro rappers, so people like Lil Wayne, Drake, and all, you know, all that group.
But you know, L.A.,
I've never gone to anybody that I know.
Let's pause for a minute.
I've never done it, and I probably never will, because I already know they've got everybody in common. Ain't nobody hear you anyway, you sound terrible, man. You sound like a tavern on Friday night. Okay, echo.
And you know you're talking about.
Okay, is this better?
Yeah, it's a little better. What you do?
It's not. What I
carry some of this stuff off.
All right, here. Let me repeat so it won't open. Old people with money, but the people that I know with money, everybody knows they have money. So I knew these people before they had money. I mean, I can trace some people I know. I can name some people right now that I know that some of the audience probably heard of their name.
But see, here's the problem, L.A. You're talking about all these vacant properties that you were reading on earlier. Then you start talking about somebody, black people won't put their money together. Now, you got land down there in Florida, right? A little stretch you showed me on.
Right.
Well, why don't you just talk to these people to get that little bitty piece there together and do something with it?
Now,
where are all these big ideas? Everybody want to take a whole city. I sent you some videos showing you where lots in Baltimore were selling for $100. You have all the lots you own.
Here's my personal philosophy on how I move. If I can, I try to get stuff by myself without partners. That's my first strategy because I don't want a whole lot of hemming and hawing over a look or anything.
Yeah, but I understand that. How old are you right about now?
Some people are just not ready for cooperative economics. And I learned a time ago, some people, no matter how much money they have, some people, it's best not to take not even a penny of their money. It's keep the relationship where it is and don't muck it for money. It's not that way with
everybody. Yeah, but you're talking about the people with the money, then you're talking about people with all these wild-ass ideas. So the people that's with the wild-ass ideas, apparently they always use the excuse that we ain't got no money, blacks won't put their money together, the churches want to go to heaven, churches won't put their money together. Then you say that there ain't no black, what is it a black bank going to do that a white bank is doing? I mean, I don't understand that. You mean to tell me just because the owner of the bank, and I showed you a couple black banks and showed you how they were structured. You mean to tell me they're going to lend money to something that's not feasible?
Well, you do have to have a feasible plan. You're right. But
why is everybody always blaming that it ain't no black banks and that white banks won't do it? I mean, Bank America is publicly traded. Any and everybody owns part of it. And they have a fiscal responsibility to their shareholders. So you don't think that they're going to violate that responsibility and just turn around and leave some money to some blacks with some ideas, and they never shown proof of what their ideas are today that they have accomplished in the past. They just don't do that, L.A.
But, Pinaki, I think you've gone, all right, one step ahead. Where I think what we were talking about earlier today was if you've got $1 million, all right, let's say you collect in a weekend $50,000 in tithes and offerings, and you happen to be a black bank, I mean, excuse me, a black church in Chicago, St. Louis, it doesn't matter what city. That in and of yourself, you're a bank. So why do you need to take that $50,000 or whatever comes in tithes and offerings and why do you need to put it in Bank of America?
You know why? I'm glad you asked that question. Because Bank of America offers services that black bank don't offer. They offer services for free that black bank don't offer. And also, they got a reputation of a stable operation where somebody you're going to be dealing with you ain't never heard of, that possibility will not provide that.
Okay. Now, before we transfer that $50,000 out of the First Church of St. Louis, that the people who gave up that $50,000 in tithes and offerings, they know and trust pastor, they know and trust the choir director, they know and trust First Lady, and they know they got their own ministry, so they know each other already. So they might not be able to offer some of
you
the
know another
services.
Reason why couldn't they put it in Bank of America? It's because Bank of America more likely gonna lend money to them to build an expansion onto their church. And now, of course, they're going to ask for Mother Jones and Sister Clara and everybody else to put up their house mortgage or their house deed as collateral. But that's just the way it works. You have to admit that. That's just the way it works.
Well, there's an information gap, in my opinion, and an education gap. But the reason
I don't think it's not no information, Doc, because I've been hearing these talks all of my life.
Besides the
how far you want to go back, and I can name you individuals who was talking about this stuff. It's always got to come down to black folks is out of their mind. Everybody's a psychologist, a psychiatrist. It's not going to happen. Simple as that. City governments don't develop. Private money develops. If private money don't see where it's going to be profitable, they're not going to do it. You can build houses all you want. But what are people going to do for a living?
Private money develops. So that's what we've been saying early on anyway. Church money, private money.
You know, there's some things that churches can't get involved in. You know that?
I'm sure. I don't know what they are, but they're nonprofits.
But see, here's the thing. If churches go out and build a building, that building don't belong to that church. If that church is a non-for-profit organization, thus by giving that opportunity by the Internal Revenue Service. Okay. Well, they have to approve on how you dispose of that property that you bought with money that was given and written off against somebody's taxes. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
See, that's the problem, and I'm not picking on you. People come up with all these ideas and don't know how this stuff works. You heard of Ray Higgins, haven't you?
Oh yeah, that's Warren Houston's guy.
Well, Ray Higgins came in St. Louis, and he came to New Ephesus Missionary Baptist Church there on Newstead. Okay. And they went through the process of taking over the church. Okay. And I kind of worked with them because of some other issues. But here's the thing. That church was in the hands of deacons before it switched over to this new set of deacons. All that had to be approved. Other words, it's like this, and I've said this before. Some of these black organizations that's non-for-profit, and they see something, a case like this, will say, why come you just can't give that to us? What, Internal Revenue Service ain't going to let it happen. Because it don't actually belong to them. It belongs to the U.S. Treasury. Because you use money that was written off against your taxes to acquire.
That's a big nugget.
I thought you knew that.
Oh, no, no.
That's you didn't know
nugget.
That.
I had no idea. I've never had a nonprofit. I have no desire to get into a nonprofit because I know that you really can't have no mistakes when you're dealing with a nonprofit.
You can't have no mistakes. You got to have all your I's dotted and your T's crossed. And then again, too, black folks just don't want to do that stuff. Whites left those cities in Baltimore, Cleveland, St. Louis, North St. Louis, now South St. Louis. They left that to black. You got black governments. You had black governments in Baltimore. It's just something that about this group of people, they just can't make it work. I mean, it's not unusual. They ain't the only one that just can't make things work. You have white groups that just can't make things. But it's something about this group that they just can't make it work.
Why do you think that might be?
I don't know. Maybe they cursed. You see that video about them squeegee kids in Baltimore?
Familiar with them, though, when I went through the city.
Yeah, they have resumed the crime to make people pay them for their service of washing the windshield. People don't want you washing our windshield. They get pissed off, bust out windows, a couple of cases they don't shot somebody. Then you got the government and preachers going to do things in order to make it a more viable business. What kind of business is that? How in the hell are you raising a family out there washing people's windows against their will in many cases of the time? I mean, what has become? Where do you get that idea from?
Oh, they were doing city before Baltimore. I know that. As you already told us, if you didn't agree to have your windows washed, they had a sack of rocks to throw at you.
A sack of rocks to throw at you and bullets to shoot at you. And they forever attacking white folks. So no, instead of going out the whole churches and congregations, go out the individual. Tell Michael Jordan, LeBron James, hey, look, we got 5 lots over here we want to buy. Maybe they can give you the money or lend you the money to buy the lots. All right, now you got the lot. Now what you going to do?
You got to develop them. Well, in places like Baltimore, I haven't been to St. Louis in a while, but in Baltimore, you can go in and buy a whole box. But, now, let me preface that. You need to be well organized with a group of people that you're associated with before you do that. Before you even get the money, you need to be well organized.
What's the date? The date is July what? July 14th, 2022. And I think I've probably been knowing you for how many years? And I'm not attacking you now. I'm just telling you what I observe. How many years have I been talking on your show from time to time?
Okay.
And it's still the same conversation. No progress. Maybe the people that you're talking to just don't want to do it. They like the entertainment, but they're not going to do it. They're just going to talk. And some of them is old as hell. Hell, the average project, the length of time it takes to get it done, they'd be dead.
You can, that's all over the place when it comes to blogs and talk radio and all this other stuff. I mean, how long have people been talking about reparations?
Because they ain't got no money.
I mean, we've had 2 million man marches 20 years apart.
Yeah, marches in 64. I talked to that, to Naeem. I mentioned 64, the 70s, 1995 million man march. Then you had sequels, Million Women's March, Million Children's March, all these sequels. Ain't nothing going to happen out of that. These people just talk and blow a lot of wind.
That do happen, but they happen on a private, low-profile level.
People running away from cities.
Then
folks don't get to complaining about gentrification. Well, you can't say it's racist because black folks, you got people of all different shades that's moving into gentrified environments. These spaces. And I know some don't like them. Move out of them. I know some Africans move. They leave them. Go someplace else. I asked one host, I said, well, how in the hell these Nigerians? Well, they come up with a million and one excuses about the culture, about visas. And pass, what the hell they got to do with it? All these damn excuses. Excuse, excuse, excuse.
Well, let me ask you this. Now, you're retired now, but the ventures, the buildings that you put up, how did you organize it? I mean, you didn't do it as a lone wolf. I'm sure you had a team. So how did you organize that? Because it didn't sound like you went to a church to bankroll all that stuff.
I didn't bankroll anything. People came out like they usually came out. We got paid for it. Ain't billing no billing for no damn black church. Hell, you'd be running around all your life trying to get your money. Can't do it like that, L.A.
Yeah,
it just don't work like that. Nobody's going to trust something that's not assured. Time comes for you to pay your money, pay your money.
Well, that's done on a one-on-one basis a lot of times.
There's no way in the world I'd build a building, put up a building, a bridge, or go into Chrysler or General Motors and do a burnout on some hope and a prayer. It just don't work like that.
Well, all right, there's some builders out here that their niche is they build churches.
They do what? Build churches.
There's some builders out here that The market in construction is they seek, I guess the target market of the type of congregation church that they're looking at. And that's what they're
talking to. They're not talking to no congregation. That's not the way that works. You want a church built, you go out and get your architect. Then that architect goes through the process of putting that package together. You don't be talking to no preaching a bunch of damn elders. They don't know what the hell they talking about. They just got an idea. And agreed upon by pictures that's brought in front of them. And another thing, I don't mess with no churches. That's too small for me to even come outside for when I was in business.
Well,
hey, you couldn't mobilize on something less than $150,000. It ain't worth it. So then you got to go to a whole different breed of contractor, somebody that would do that. But me in particular, I wouldn't come out or mobilize for less than $150,000. They ain't worth it, L.A.
Well, for these days, you're absolutely right.
You think a Halliburton would come out and build a black church? Hell no.
Halliburton's in the infrastructure of cities and countries. No, Halliburton ain't messing.
And why would black churches build? Why would black groups build new churches when they can rent and lease the ones that whites left in the city when they up and ran? And I don't blame them for running. Well, that's just the way things are. And look at the little Minnesota
or DC. You got people that are leaving out, but you also have people moving back in.
Well, yeah, it makes some opportunities for those who want to go through all that. You can bring refugees from another country into a Detroit, and they turn Detroit back to damn near where it was. But the people that's there now just can't do it.
And I understand that is, I understand Syrians have been trickling in, and I guess Ukrainians in certain cities are trickling in. And you're right, that's going to rejuvenate someplace.
Blacks is not going to do it. That's like the idiots be talking about slaves built America. Ain't no damn slaves built America. What kind of sense is that? If they was that good a build, Africans never would have got rid of their asses.
Well,
people don't use no common sense.
You also have Asians that helped build, Scottish people who helped build. There were quite a number of ethnic groups that helped build and whatnot. So, look, Bianchi, I'm going to log off.
You look at them brownstones in Chicago, or you look at the building structures and configuration in your city. And we're going back in the 1800s because some of those basic building structure, the roof patterns, the floor structures, platform built, foundation, they weren't building nothing like that in Africa. So how in the hell slaves gonna all of a sudden show up here and start building that? That's a bunch of bull crap. Unless you can see something that I don't.
No, slaves did not build Manhattan, New York as we know it today.
Benjamin Banner did not lay out Washington, D.C. either. If you know anything about surveying, you know damn well that ain't possible. Even today with modern equipment. Even today with geostationary satellite, theodolite equipment, That's a bunch of damn bamboozlement. And I just laugh at that.
The way
but
I
anyway,
heard it, the way I heard it, LaFont was the original one that, I guess, laid out the city, if that's the right term. And he had a disagreement or whatever, and he quit. I'm just repeating, paraphrasing what I heard originally. And then they bought him Benjamin Banneker. But that's about the, that's how it was explained to me. What really happened?
So Benjamin Banner laid out the city. Well, hell, if one thing, it's going to take more than one person to do that. So how in the hell did he do it? Today it takes more than one person.
True. Well, that's the way they tell the story.
Now, the thing is that all that stuff sounds good. It sounds exciting. It sounds captivating to a mind who don't have no perception and understanding of how things work.
I'm going to have to go back and read about Benjamin Banneker, LaFont, and Surveying 101. Because you're right, D.C.'s not that big geographically, but that's not a one-man job, I can tell you. Any place like that is not a one-man job. Even a small place like Taft is not a one-man job.
Now, you know what would be a one-man job? Your
okay.
plot of, you got down there in Florida.
The 4 acres. That's
four
at least,
acres,
say,
yeah.
You need at least 2 people for that.
Yeah, but anyway, get your phone and stuff. Your technology working, man. You just, I mean, I wanted to show you off, but heck, people come and say, Pianca, what you wasting our time here for? I can't even understand what this guy's saying. What I'm going to tell him?
I got to get a new modem. Because that's why I've been having problems for the last week or so.
Hell, you can't buy a modem with tomato seeds. I'll talk to you later.
All right.
Hope to.